Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Just fabulous.
Great.
Aren't we lucky?
We are. We are incredibly lucky. And it's here on the East Coast, but not as hot as California used to get. So that's good.
Oh, it's warm where you are?
85 today.
85. Wow.
Yeah.
And a little humid?
A little humid, yes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Are you enjoying that part?
Not as much as the dry warmth of California, but
uh-huh.
I'm good. Thank you.
Because it's interesting to me. I've never lived in humidity, and it's much more humid here than one would think. And it's an interesting it's just an interesting experience. I find it quite fascinating. I didn't find it as fascinating, I must confess, in say the South or on the East Coast, let's face it. But different climates, it makes for new and interesting life experiences.
That's
and Michael, as people point out, it's very nice for your complexion.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Great. And as your teacher would say, no reason to be bored. Are you there? Did I lose you, Sherry? Oh, looks like I lost Sherry. Come on, sec. There you are. Are you back?
Apologies, Michael. I don't know if this is happening to you, but it's happening to a number of people that I've talked to where this voice comes on and says, I'm sorry, the number that you're calling has restrictions and your call cannot be completed, and then it cuts you off. So that's what just happened. So if I start disappearing, then we'll blame technology.
And we'll just meditate because we're welcome.
That you just meditate along, Philip. Yeah, exactly. It's good to have that skill, isn't it? We're never bored, never without something to keep us engaged. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I have announcements here.
All right.
If you have a question or concern you believe just cannot be raised in our practice, we have a workshop for you. Our Really No Taboos workshop this coming Sunday, May 26th, will offer an opportunity to talk to the guide about whatever the voices have convinced you cannot be addressed by your awareness practice.
Yeah, and Michael, if that sounds intimidating, people don't have to make it about them. You know, it can, because a couple of times recently we've had people come on and say, you know, that I was afraid to talk about this, or I thought we couldn't talk about this. So it doesn't have to be, I have this addiction to something that as soon as my family and friends find out, or I'll be fired. You know, we're not. That's not we. We can talk about it more as a general orientation to how ego keeps parts of life compartmentalized in such a way that they can remain areas of suffering, and a person doesn't even realize that's what's going on. So, you know, it's one of the old, if everybody knows everything about you, you can't possibly be blackmailed. That kind of.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah,
it might even be an area that that I'm not aware that I can't bring into awareness practice because it's been pushed down or so compartmentalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it might not even be particularly, something that is yours, but just something that you're really aware that you hear people talking about this, or you hear, you read about it, but it never comes up in practice. You could be interested in that, and even though it's not particularly an issue for you or an issue for you at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, fascinating. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to attend.
Yeah, me too.
And Summer of Sangha is starting soon. Our spiritual home at our spiritual home at 4 Acre Zen Center in gorgeous Squim, Washington, will host week-long and weekend retreats in July and August, offering yoga, meditation, guidance, and workshops. In addition, it will be possible to accept the precepts with this practice during the summer offerings. Mm-hmm. Only a few slots are left, so sign up right away.
And that is true. We've had a couple of cancellations over the last little while, and a couple of people have slipped in, but it's getting tight. So, yeah. At least let us know if if anybody's out there who knows that they want to come, at least communicate that so that if something, it's unfortunate, but things are happening in people's lives all the time. And so if a spot opens up, at least we can know that person is wanting to get in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show. And conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, let's get rolling here.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Well, hello, Catherine.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on?
Well, I have had such an interesting time being in the queue. It dropped in, call the radio show and talk about this a little while ago, and then being in the queue of ego trying to talk me out of this, talking.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of, this happens, people say this all the time. And it's just like what I was going to say just kind of starts to unravel and gets really vague and foggy. And what am I talking about again?
And why did I think that was
I think mm-hmm. I'll just take myself out of the queue and just listen.
Until I get clear, right?
Right.
Until it comes back and I really get clear on what I'm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of things kind of going on and interrelated, but what I'm looking at a process that it just seems really creepy to me. It's going on in my head. And mm-hmm. I've just noticed this, like, say, in the last couple of months, mm-hmm. I will have an interaction with someone, and then I will notice that there is this assessment of how I did in the interaction, but it will talk about me as if I were a completely different person. It will say, like, well, she was really, she is really a friendly, nice person, and everybody likes her, and is talking about me. Isn't that creepy?
Well, yeah, but no creepier than when it talks directly to you. And tells you you're everything but that. We're used to that.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Oh, well,
yeah.
You were so unfriendly there. Everybody hates you. They can't stand the sight of you. You know, we think that's normal. I mean, it when we catch on to it, it does seem a little extreme, but at least that voice talking to us is something we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about you in that way, as if you're not actually there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting
Isn't
twist.
Well, just dropped in that it makes it seem, so what my reaction to that when I first started noticing was, well, am I just being nice so I can have a good image with people. You know, it took the interaction and however it's going to say that I was in the interaction and turned it into, you're just being nice so people will think you're nice. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It just never quits, does it?
No.
So I had this fantasy when you were describing it, that when it starts in with that stuff, you go, that is so true, isn't it? I just love her.
Oh, yeah, I should. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Just go right along with it, because all of these things are meant to freak us out.
Mm-hmm.
Everything it does is meant to throw us off, upset us, get us to engage with it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, you just say, oh, I know, I just love her. And just go on with what you're doing. And just see what it comes up with next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's all creepy.
It's all really creepy. And when you were saying that it was dropping in, it's like when the thoughts come through that are mean about somebody or something, or racist, it's like, wait a minute, who just put that in my head? That's not coming from me. It feels like
that's
coming
right
from me.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, that is so important. I didn't say that.
Right.
I didn't think that. But it appeared in my head.
Yeah.
And it's catching on to that. Again, there is no quicker trip to that system is not me.
Mm-hmm.
Then being right there as it says something or as a picture of something appears in your mind, and you know you didn't put it there.
Mm-hmm.
You're as surprised by it as if it was said out loud and you heard it for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I get blamed for it.
Oh, you're
a nasty person. You're a mean.
Of course.
People
go along with that right up until this point. When you get it that, actually, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good observer, and I was duped for a long time, but I see what's going on. It's not me.
Yeah. Just one last thing about the creepy voice of, isn't she a wonderful person, and all, everybody loves her. That what I've noticed that's particularly where I work, and I think I've talked about my job to you and how much I love it, and I have just some really enjoyable interactions with people. I just do with the people I work with, the residents at the community where I work, and that voice after an interaction with one of the residents, and I've really enjoyed it. And that voice comes in; it takes that energy away.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it drains it. It's like, it's the suggestion being, it's all about your image. This is all fake.
Catherine, for a long time, it was able to get you with, because you believed that those nasty things that it said and those nasty pictures that it offered you were you, that you were doing that. You believed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when it said you're an awful person, I mean, you were right on board. Well, of course. I mean, look at the kinds of things I think. So, I'm an awful person. And then you catch on that's not true. And to make it worse, you actually have a job that you love and you really like/love the people you work with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a difficult place for ego. Because all the stuff it's been doing, you're not buying it any longer. It's so incongruent. Incongruent? With the emphasis on the wrong syllabra. it would be so out of keeping. It would catch your attention. Here, you love the job, you love the place, you love the people, and this voice is saying these awful things. So it's really in a hard place there. So what is it going to do? What goes the opposite? It's the master of opposites. Mm-hmm. Oh yes. Yes, you're just so wonderful. You're just so wonderful and everybody loves you. And that's why you're doing it, Catherine. That's why you're doing it. Very similar playbook. It's all going to come around to, and this is what's wrong with you. However it goes, if you're gonna be sweet and nice and love people and have them love you, okay, we can use that.
Yep,
not a problem. We can turn that against you.
Maybe that's just why I've never heard this voice before. You know?
Oh, exactly. Because you were believing.
Yeah.
Well,
you didn't have to go to that extreme.
That's right. You believed that you were the person it said you were, that mean, hateful, judgmental person. You thought that's who you were. So, it didn't have to work very hard.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, good deal. Well, thank you so much.
Catherine, the thing that I think is so funny now, it's like, okay, you caught on to the first one, and in a very short period of time, you've caught on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it going to go now?
I have no idea.
it really doesn't have too many plays left, and yet it's going to try something.
It'll try something, yep, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Be interesting.
It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. And Sherry, that is fascinating to watch how conditioning adapts. It takes about a tenth of a second to go from one side to the other. I know.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that master of adapting, that's the deal. I mean, that's what it specializes in. And yes, in just a matter of a couple of seconds, from one side of an issue to the other side of an issue, arguing just as strongly on either side of it. Yeah. And what's fascinating, until a person starts doing a pretty solid awareness practice, is the person goes right with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Voices on this side, yeah, that's true. Voice flips to this, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And we have another caller here, sir.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
It's Karen from...
Hey, Karen.
Hey, hi. I'm listening. I'm here.
I
loved that last conversation. That was so fun to listen to, because I think... I don't know that I had quite seen that. That was just very helpful. So, and I was just looking at something that feels really, ego's telling me is really small and insignificant and so silly to bring up.
Of course. Not too silly and insignificant to torture you with, of course, whenever it has a chance.
Yeah.
But not worth bringing up.
Well, kind of like what was talked about in just sitting in the queue and like going, oh, Karen, this is so silly, you know, like.
Yeah.
And what it was, I was just doing something and looked out the window and I mean, it is really small, but anyway, there was this little fly on the window. Actually, it was a big fly. I have a really nifty way I get bugs outside, and this is just like a plastic container and then a really thin piece of cardboard. And
a bug bus.
Yeah, a bug bus, but a very lightweight one. Mm-hmm. And so I went over, and it was kind of, the fly wasn't on the glass. It was more on the whatever surrounds the window frame, you know, and it's got, it just had all these places. So there was no way to get it into the cup.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'm holding there and I kind of touched it with the side of the cup because I thought it would make it fly. And it just, it it actually walked, it got on, it walked itself right into the container.
Oh, perfect.
It just walked
smart
right
fly
in there. And so I just put the lid on and walked outside and, you know, and turned it the other way. And it just flew out of the container. And I just think, that is so much fun. I learned all that, I'm pretty sure, from you all, you know, how just everything was so tenderly picked up, every little bug or whatever, or the ants. Remember the ants?
Mm-hmm.
That you'd get ants and you'd sweep them with a paintbrush into a little teeny mm-hmm. tiny and put them outside. And I had a couple ants in my kitchen yesterday that they were so tiny that I probably would have, even a paintbrush would have been too much for them. So I just thought, you are so tiny, I don't even know how I can see you. And you can just stay, because I'm not gonna.
Now, if you start growing a lot, if you start getting really big, you're gonna have to go outside. But, well, you know, Karen, in listening to you talk about this, to me, it's a fascinating topic, because at what point do things become so small or so insignificant that they don't matter? So, first of all, let me tell you that when I just did that the other day, and I bet I spent a half an hour going around the house talking to this fly, because every time I would get near it, of course, it would take off. And then I would admonish it. You know, if you will just stay here, just stay still, I will take you outside and you'll be a free fly. Otherwise, you're going to fly around in here until you die. So neither one of us want that. So we're having this whole, you know, this whole conversation. And then finally, of course, it did. They do get tired, you know. Who wouldn't get tired? And so finally it was tired, and I was able to catch it and take it outside. And whenever I turn them loose, I always say, be a Buddhist, because I figure, you know, that's going to, you know, they're not a lot of, I mean, I'm sure there are other people besides Buddhists, but, and so they could say whatever. They, you know, whatever they do that makes them care about other living creatures, they say, well, follow that path. And so at what point does something, you know, get big? Now, for a lot of people, there isn't anything big enough. There isn't anything other than themselves and a few other people that they care about that are important enough to care about. But even for people who care about things, you know, people can be a vegetarian, but they'll still kill a fly. Or they'll still step on an ant, or they'll, you know, whatever it is. And so, to me, I always go back to that little theory that I have, that it all comes down to convincing children that they should eat meat. And what we have to go through with a child to convince it that something that the child knows intuitively is another living creature, just like it, how that child gets talked into closing their heart enough that other living being doesn't matter. And, you know, even though I realize that most people would think this is an insane statement, it is a direct path to we don't care about other human beings. Because once you've decided that it's possible to write something off, then it's possible to write anything off.
Yeah, and for me, it was a journey back to, I as a child, I cared about living things. I tried to save everything.
Absolutely.
A lizard or anything.
Anything.
I loved
your
all
friends.
That. I loved that as a kid.
All your friends.
And then you're right, because as time went on, that all became, you know, well, I ate meat. I grew up in a family like that. And so it was, you know, it was a journey back not mm-hmm. to eat meat and to care, and then to see a fly, you know, mm-hmm. or a teeny tiny ant as mm-hmm. a living being that has mm-hmm. intelligence.
Doing exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
Trying to stay alive, right? Find something to eat, find a safe place, have a family, raise your children, hope nobody steps on them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And where I live, there's a lot of black widow spiders, and I have an old garage, and I went out and I was going somewhere and I was going to get in my car, and when I opened the garage door, a light goes on, and I saw this huge black widow spider just right by the door of my car. It was climbing up a web, and I just stood there because I was like, I'm not going to go near it. They kind of scare me, and yet I don't kill them. So I waited mm-hmm. for it to leave. I mean, to get back out of sight, because I could see it was afraid of me.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was trying. It knew I was there, and mm-hmm. so I got in my car and went and did my thing. And then I haven't parked in the garage since. I'm parking out on the street. But I went out there in the garage and for something else. And it was one early morning, and it was down by the. It's had its web way down by the floor of the garage. So I got one of those webbers, or high dusters, as the monastery calls them, and I just scooped it up, you know, along with the web, and got it on my high duster, and then just put it outside, and I mm-hmm. could see it. A black widow spider will actually roll itself into a little marble. You know, I didn't hurt it, but they will, mm-hmm. they like to protect themselves. Like, I'm not going to hurt you, I just don't want to be afraid of you every time I get into my car. And mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to thank practice for the awareness of it. And
that's right. And go ahead.
Well, just, and the joy.
That's
the
right.
Joy
that's where I was
that,
going.
Of that little fly that crawled into the cup, like it knew, like, thank you, because I really need to get outside.
Yes,
not make
yes.
It long on this
and that,
and,
right, and that's the thing that, again, before I let you go, that until we pay pretty close attention, we're not aware of what it does to the heart to kill something and what a joy it is to the heart to help something. And once we realize that, then whether we kill something or we just... we're just uncaring or insensitive or don't see it or whatever it is, we can know that that hurts the heart. And so we want to be in the Happy Heart Club, and that means caring about everything. And all that means is being here. Not like it takes extra time or effort or anything else to pay attention and be aware and be caring. It doesn't. It does, though, deliver tremendous joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does.
All right. Oh, one other thing before I let you go. When you're here, I'm eager for you to be back because the fawns are here. And I have so much, my windows are so barricaded against birds flying into them that I can't take pictures through the windows any longer. They stand, the new babies, I know that they're not even 18 inches tall up to the top of their head.
They are
adorable. Yeah.
Oh,
all right.
Can't
so,
wait.
Something
can't
to look
wait.
Forward to.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Thank you.
Go happy.
Thank you. Thank you. Go happy.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. And Sherry, we are going to move to our good news update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. And Jen, I'll turn it over to you for a good news update.
Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Tracy, who is here to speak with us about her experience of practicing with the most recent Musings article. Welcome, Tracy.
Thanks, Jen. nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. So, another absolutely beautiful article. Mm. Tell us about practicing with it.
Well, before I talk about practicing with it, I was struck by the conversation that Sherry and Karen just had around the fly. There was the fly kind of walking into the bug bus. And what dropped in was in the Musings article, there was a like sentence in it about being completely guided but not in charge.
Yes. So funny, Tracy. That is so the line that stood out for me too. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I just so with that being said, it's so interesting when I think the Musings article came out on Thursday, and we were the week long was focused on projection, and I read the Musings, and it's interesting how like when I read it, there's like images that arise based on the words. And then, so there's, and I could talk about that. There's many different ways I could go in this conversation, because it's always so rich. But there's, you know, things that arise just in reading the words. And then in that place, you know, the Musings was around receptivity to grace. Then just what unfolds is just the perfect workshop to practice what is being pointed out in the Musings. And it just always seems pretty miraculous.
Yeah. So say more. So in other words, first of all, there's the experience of the words that come from reading the article. But then in this case, and it, you know, as you say, it so often happens. I mean, it's, you know, really when we're here for anything, it's so... our experience is so guided by what it, you know, the insight around that thing. So it sounds like you got to have an experience of practicing with grace soon after the article came out.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And you know, when I first read it, the article is started out with a Maya Angelou poem on a poem around the caged bird. Things of, you know, singing of freedom. And the next line is, and it says, the caged bird sings of freedom, not bondage. And then the article kind of goes on to talk about, you know, the spiritual journey being a movement. It's not a movement from bondage to freedom, but a cleansing of the doors of perception. And what just arose for me was going to the, you know, monastery for the very first time. I didn't, there's nothing wrong with you retreat, you know, decades ago. And I went there, you know, a little bit not familiar with practice, but from the encouragement of somebody else who wanted me to go to see what everything was wrong with me. and what I got to experience there was, you know, again, I'm going to refer to the article again. It just talked about the awareness of the song of freedom and bewilderment that we seldom give voice to it. And I didn't know that there was a song of freedom. And when I read those words, what chopped in was being at facilitated in group and through the workshop at the Zen Monastery Peace Center, I had the experience of being able to sing my song, like to express my direct experience and have it be okay. And that felt so freeing. Like it was a thing that I didn't know that I was looking for, but it felt so free, like so home.
Mm. It's such a beautiful description, because it really points at, you know, we often talk about how one of the central gifts of this practice is that insight that there is nothing wrong. It's so, well, first of all, it's so ingrained in us from such a young age, you know, this, I don't like this, I do like this, this is wrong, that's wrong. And so
it's really radical to consider that there is nothing wrong. And so such a beautiful description of grace, of you coming to a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, really getting to sing your song and get and all of that being profoundly okay. So all of the things that we think make us, you know, terrible and not lovable and all those things, we get to put it all out there to sing that song and find out all of it is completely all right.
Yes, exactly. So that's what arose when I read it. And then lo and behold, it's a perfect workshop, right? And then in the article, there is a reference to, you know, getting in these karmic cul-de-sacs. And you know, it's when it's ego identification being that best opportunity to transcend a habitual orientation. And I thought, oh, here's my invitation to grace. So it just a tiny bit of content. My boyfriend was in a bike accident and broke more than a handful of bones and was admitted into the hospital. And I had sent a text to my, you know, just my immediate family, just letting them know what was going on. And I had a response from one of my siblings that I just really surprised me. My sense is it kind of hurt my heart. Like it didn't feel kind and it didn't feel, and I could just feel that, you know, that karmic orientation of like, you know, this isn't okay. And I just kept going to, you know, went to a couple of different places. One is, since we were looking at projection, really seeing the projection of it. And then two, going to that place when I read the Musings article of that profound experience of being able to speak my experience and have it be okay. And so how was I going to engage with this? There just felt like that, you know, that I again, the musings pointed, I can't remember the exact words, but being, you know, that receptivity to grace of like, where's the grace here? That there's nothing wrong, that he responded from that projected, you know, he projected place, and how did I want to engage with it? And you know, and so it felt like there was this absolutely profound opportunity for me to practice with what, you know, what we were, this beautiful writing that we were, you know, came into the email box and, you know, then, you know, voila, the next day the email class focuses on no fault. And it just was just really, really wonderful to just not really know what the response was, but that receptivity to grace. That next day, just this one-liner dropped in, and I texted myself that one-liner, and I was like, oh, that feels like it's my bird song. Oh. Like, there's nothing wrong. It's my bird song. Oh. And because I could see my condition orientation is to not say anything, and that didn't feel free, and I didn't want to, you know, so anyway, and then something dropped in, and I was like, oh, that feels like a song. And, you know, I sent it out, and it turned out to be a really beautiful unfolding. And not that I did it to have a beautiful unfolding, but just that, again, that, like, going back to the, that place of the cleansing the doors of perception, of how can I be with whatever is so triggering without there being anything wrong? Like, how can I give back what's been gifted to me?
Yes. And you know,
stay engaged in it.
And stay engaged in it. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, you're pointing at that place of where is the grace to be found here? That really makes a beautiful connection of how in the article, being receptive to grace really does point at making that movement to there is nothing wrong, right? Because I think it was going, the inquiry isn't, why can't I see grace? right? Which really is it's a nothing wrong. Why can't I see grace? You know, so I'm in this situation. Why can't I see grace here? Why, you know what? But instead, where is grace to be found here? That's an inquiry place. And so because you had that article and you also used the year-long assignment for the week, it's such a perfect example of how we engage in awareness practice. Okay, so here's this thing happening in my life. So I turn to practice, and I turn to the things, the practice tools that are here now, and it unfolds perfectly from there.
Yes, and it's just amazing that it feels like in that karmic orientation, like what's available is not the song of freedom.
Exactly.
You know, when I'm able to just stay, just to really bring compassion to the whole, to everything, and just really be with it, and, you know, like you just pointed to, just, you know, offer that inquiry of, you know what I'm here to be, that, you know, the recipient of grace, and I'm here to be, you know, show me. And it's always pretty miraculous. Like, it's just like things just drop in, like, where'd that come from? Like,
Because you're turning attention to presence, right? Which is, I think, another piece. I can't remember. That was another beautiful line in the article. But, yeah, it's an experience of being present to presence. Yes.
Being presence to presence. Yes. It's, you know, and the article kind of just made reference to, you know, a number of different ways of, you know, disidentification from a clinging, or, you know, something just like dropping in as an aha. And I just, you know, and there feels to be like the receptivity to grace is an ever growing process that is cultivated from these, you know, from these practices that we're invited to participate in, you know, through the year long. Or even the daily peace quotes. I'm so struck by how the peace quotes of the week are like all kind of, you know, dovetailed in with, you know, what we're looking at.
You think we were divinely guided or something.
I know. Yeah. So it's really good. It's so good. And there's just so many opportunities, and life is. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tracy, for being with us today to talk about it.
Well, thank you, Jen. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, I know people will go.
It's a beautiful article.
Look it up if they haven't already. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for being with us today, Tracy.
Thank you.
Go happy.
Go happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Tracy. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, we have more callers here.
All right. I just wanted to ask you, I know somebody will probably text you this, Michael, when we're on the next thing, but I was just wondering if anybody is thinking, what are they talking about? Can you give us a heads up about where people can find the Musings articles on the website? Somebody will text you.
Okay.
Unless
there
you know.
Go.
All right.
Yes. And let me bring our next caller on. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, this is Lori calling from North Carolina.
Well, hello, Lori. What's going on?
Hi. Well, in so many directions, so much is going on, and it just to call in and hear people talking about flies and ants, because I've been had just a whole hatching out of flies in my house yesterday, and so it's one by
special
one.
Moment, isn't it? It's a special moment. God,
there's another big whatever they're called, like group of them. I don't know what baby flies are called.
Yeah,
and just a whole. Just the interaction and the being a part of of all of life. It's really astonishing. So, yeah, so that's been fun to hear people's experience with that, since I've been having my version of that. And
it's springtime, right? Everybody's having babies, and a lot of them having unwanted babies in places we don't want them to have them, and there we are. We're all in this together, right? Isn't that the way we talk about it?
And this is not what I called in about, but also because the baby bears have been hatching and not hatching, they've been birthing.
Yes.
with the small creatures too, and the tiniest little bears that climb to the really, really, really high trees. And you go, wow. Oh my God, how do they get up? And then the mom go. Recently, I saw the mom go up. I didn't realize what she was going up for until she started to come back down with the two babies behind her. So she was going to say,
going, what? I told you not to. Do you know that?
And they got down. They all three were down, and one of the babies started climbing up again. I mean, it was so just such a miracle to watch it. They're in my neighborhood. They're right around the corner now. What's going on for me is I'm just thinking about with flies and bears and ants and relationships with my friends and with myself and with my health, and it's been a really whirlwind time for about probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 months of particularly the focus. And I realized how, because I haven't been thinking very clearly, I've had something going on with my brain, and how have I been coping? And I was looking back to see what are the distractions I've been doing and having trouble staying connected to the year long, and now I feel like I'm back sort of in track with that, unfortunately, and calling in and talking and with you, and then having like so many medical opinions coming towards me and ideas about what's going on and really extreme sorts of diagnoses, and then now hearing, well, you know, it's not as bad as we thought, but it's like say this sort of high alert and acceptance and going, oh, okay, well, I can be with this, and then there's another turn, and with another turn, it's like I feel ungrounded and kind of like I'm rolling down a hill or something and not knowing where I'm going, and then along with that, practicing with, well, this is what's here, and I'm here with what's here, and that's been going really well until there's another like flip, and then I'm kind of like, well, wait a minute, I'm with what's here now. What's here? Oh, this is something different that's here. And so
yes,
it's been really disorienting. I mean, just I'm hearing myself talk about it because it is disorienting. I don't know what's going on, what direction I'm moving in, what's here for me now, and so just to say that, and then, yeah, go ahead.
Just before you go on to the next thing, what's here for you now is paying really close attention to what's here for you now. That's the common thing I'm hearing in all of this, right? So somebody comes in with this, and you go, oh, okay, all right, okay, well, that's what's here now. And you adjust to that. And then the next thing comes in. And you do the same process. That's a lot. And then you adjust to that, and you're here with this, what's here now. That's the constant. And you know, Lori, that's the only thing you have any, don't ever say I said this, okay, I'll call you a liar. That's the only thing you have any control over. Right?
I knew you weren't going to say that word.
Yeah, the only thing you can affect, right? That's it.
Right.
The rest of it, what these people are doing, what they're saying, what they've got going about what they're doing and saying, you can't do anything about that. And you can watch how all of the conditioning just gets in a state, just like always. It's always been like that.
Same old, same old.
Same old, same old. Just incredible content.
Right, right. And it's so true. I am. You know, with a little bit elevated content, I get to have that. I keep saying, you know, this is what's here for me, and how am I going to be with it? That's it's great practice, and it's also sometimes really challenging.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. It's really challenging. That's why almost nobody does it, Lori. That's why. That is the answer to why this is not popular, right? Yeah. Because what we're meant to do, what we're trained to do, is just get hysterical and despair. Go into all sorts of emotional states and stay there. But you're watching all of this, right?
Yeah, but I am. And it's not even despair. My go-to is distract. And so I'm realizing, so what else can I do now that'll take my attention into some other place?
Is that such a bad thing?
Well, that's exactly when I was listening earlier to the conversations, and I don't know what is it that got me going around that, is to say, yeah, so what? What's here right now?
That's right.
How we look. Yeah.
Yes, because again, the ego voices would say, oh, no, you need to stay here and listen to us try to work you up into hysteria, right? And what you're saying is, actually, I don't. Actually, I'm going to do this other thing, which I enjoy.
Wow.
I mean, if you're lost in something, you know, people will talk about doing playing solitaire on the computer for hours, right? And that's because that doesn't take care of you. But if you decide that you're going to read something, you're going to watch something, or you're going to listen to something because it brings you something in this moment that supports you and cares for you, okay. What's the problem?
That is so different from where is your spiritual practice? This is your what you're supposed to be, and then whatever follows that. And you're not being that. You're not. I mean, you know, really.
And that's where you say, yes, and isn't my spiritual practice working, and isn't that proof of it? Yes. I am doing so well because I can hear that and know that it's nonsense. Yeah, I'm in a good place here.
Wow, yes. Even when it doesn't seem like it, even when all of that, that sort of nonsense is going on, I know, you're right. And it's like, I know what that is. Training, right? I've been training.
Yeah.
I hear it again, right?
So two things about it, Lori. One is I go back to Ram Dass when he was doing hospice work, and people would come to him. Their loved one had a terminal diagnosis, and they were in denial. They were just, you know, they were not accepting it. They were just doing everything other than accepting the fact that they had a terminal diagnosis. And he said, and the problem with that is what? If they want to be in denial about it, okay, let them be in denial about it. What is the alternative? You want them to think about it all the time? How is that gonna help them, right? So that's one thing. And the second thing is that one of the real marks of spiritual, I don't even know how to say this, Lori, but it's like where we're headed spiritually is to be able to observe whatever is going on from a place of equanimity, okay? Not denial, not distraction, but really a place of equanimity, which is what you are describing. Now, it takes a little while to go from somebody's whatever they've got going and whatever that, and I will say this way, even though people could argue with me, what that is meant to evoke in the recipient of it. So people give you information. It's not designed to soothe you or calm you. It's upsetting information, and it's usually delivered in a really upsetting way. As you indicated, later on, it's not as bad as we thought. Well, could we have started there? So
exactly.
That's kind of another topic, okay? Yeah. But my point that I want you to take from this is that what you're watching, what you're being able to do is witness that coming at you. You're witnessing what is going on with your conditioning, right? Which wants to just hook into that and go right along with it. And you're watching yourself go through that to the other side and get to a place of, well, this is what we have right now. And so I hope that you will experience that as the very real proof and kind of celebration of the practice that you've been doing, that is where you are with this.
And you know, really, I do absolutely give thanks for the practice, because I think just from the onset, I've been more curious than anything. It's like,
yes.
People around me have been kind of freaked out, and I'm like, well, you know, what happens here? And so, and I that wouldn't be possible. I mean, if I had, I know it wouldn't have been had I
not
been practicing all year.
No.
So, yeah.
No, it would not. And you know, one of our favorite expressions is, these are the times we practice for.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Somebody on a call recently was talking about the grasshopper not preparing. It doesn't matter. and my comment was, but what the grasshopper was supposed to do is get ready for what's coming, not sit around and get anxious and worried about what's coming. And so that's where we all are. It's coming. Either today, tomorrow, next month, next year, it's coming. And so are we preparing for what's coming, or are we going to live in this, oh, I don't really need to pay attention because nothing is going on now, and then be completely hysterically flattened when what's coming comes? You've been preparing.
Right. Right, right. I mean, every moment feels like it's practice, and practice is preparing, and it's all part of the same thing. It really is.
It is. Yep.
How do I want to be at this moment, right?
That's right. Being fully alive right now. Present for all of it. Yep.
Present for all of it, yeah. Okay, well, thank you so very, very much.
You are so very welcome.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Go happy.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Lori. And Sherry, I have some good information about the musings.
Oh, thank you.
And you can find it in several different ways. You can go to livingcompassion.org/musings, and you'll find it there. Again, that's livingcompassion.org/musings. Or if you go to the homepage and then you click on the practice tab, and that takes you to another page. And if you look on the right there, there's a tab called Stay in Touch. And under that menu, fourth item down is the musings.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. That's great. And there are lots of them, and they're fabulous. And I don't want to say too much, but I think they're coming out as an ebook. But anyway, some of them are. I don't know. More about that soon.
Yes, and I also go to my email and just search my email with the word musings, and they all pop up there also.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, okay, all right.
I was just told all newsletters are to be found there.
Oh, all newsletters. Oh, okay. So you can read about Africa, you can read the blogs, you can read about Practice Corner, you can read about all kinds of things that are going on in practice.
Wow, New Beginnings Vlog, Practice Corner, the Monthly Recollection.
The Monthly
RLU.
Recollection.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, Michael, we say it all the time, but it's really true. This is a phenomenal practice. It really is.
It is really such
good people
practice.
Doing such good stuff together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's great to be reminded of that because, you know, conditioning wears off, that extraordinary sense of wonder and curiosity that comes when I discover and rediscover a practice.
In fact, somebody just texted me today about being in a situation where people are so obviously suffering and so wanting people to know that there's an alternative, that it's not a requirement, and then seeing the resistance to another way. And so for each of us to just be endlessly grateful that when an alternative was offered to us, we said yes. And that's miraculous. I mean, I didn't, it wasn't a conscious yes from me. I didn't say, oh, yeah, I can see the rest of my life could be suffering, but if I say yes to this, I'm going to be the happiest person I've ever run into. I didn't know any of that, and yet the yes was there, and the continuing yeses, and here we are.
Yeah, yes, yeah, you make an excellent point. It's the first yes and the continuing yeses, the continuing
staying
bonus.
With the yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad I did.
Me too. Me too. I'm glad you did, and I'm even more glad I did. All right. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, everyone. And go happy.
Go happy.